So, faithful followers, the end is nigh. We bid you farewell
with dignity and pride.
We thought we'd never die, but, well, you can't fight City Hall. And so,
take care. Be good.
Listen to the music. It's a good thing to do. It's the count. Counting down and out for the count at last. 3, 2, 1. And the rest is silence.
Thank you, Tony. Well done, Tony.
Thank you, sir.
The Queen.
Her Majesty's Government.
Only kidding, dude!
Let's rock!
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
My generation, baby. Why don't you all fade away?
Talking about my generation.
Don't try and dig what we all say.
Talking about my generation. What we all talking about my generation.
I'm trying to cause a big sensation.
Talking about my generation.
Talking about my generation.
My generation,
my generation, baby. Cause we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things ain't doing awful cold.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
My generation, baby.
My generation,
generation.
Welcome to Voices Carry Live. My name is Randy Scott. Happy almost New Year. We are live, broadcasting live from the beautiful village of Cary to X, Rumble, and YouTube. And then this show is for you. This is an independent venture from myself to try to bridge the gap between social media and having a voice in our communities. What we do is we try to make talking points to where we can start talking with our neighbor more and become that strong community that we once had back so long ago. I know that we do have a strong community now, but I do see great things in our future. On this New Year's Eve show, many of you are probably not watching because you're doing you're partying and or you're having get-togethers. But I wanted to be with you guys on this beautiful New Year's Eve. A little chilly. We can take a look at the weather here. Nothing coming in right now, but I wanted to, I consider you guys friends and family, so I wanted to have a show today. Even some national shows kind of phone it in, and they don't, they do like reruns and stuff, but this show means a lot to me, to where I can, if some of you, rely on like a getaway, to where it's like, hey, that guy's trying to fight for my voice, and he's got something to say every day, even though sometimes I don't have as much to say than other days. It's nice to I want to be there for you, so that's what I'm here doing today. As I promised with the new year, cutesy time might come to an end. That doesn't mean the end of current events, and cutesy time ending does not mean getting nasty or angry or anything like that. It just means getting into the issues that mean a lot to me, the issues that I don't want to have my kids dealing with when they get older. A lot that I do, pretty much all of my actions are based in the fact that I'm blessed with being able to see into what could be if we continue going down certain paths. And I'm also blessed with an amazing family, but my work history has also blessed me with seeing how fragile life is. So one of the blessings that has given me is knowing the difference between noise and signal. Noise and signal. So noise to me is, unfortunately, my friends don't enjoy it, but football games, and it doesn't mean I don't enjoy a good baseball or football game, but I enjoy hearing signal more than noise. And signal to me is what can I read, what can I view that I can put away and file away in my toolbox, my brain, that I can later use to help you, my family. And one of the things I promised coming into the new year is I have a whole bunch of things that kind of that I've seen and has happened to me that have been red flags. That's why I have these flags here. Whenever I come across an issue that I'd like to tackle, that I can see that it might be an issue for my children later on in life, or for your children later on in life, I'd like to flag it. And I have some flags here, and there's more than just there, but those are the ones that I've come across while doing this program live with you. And also, signal is I wanted to share with you tonight. But first of all, hold on. I promised early in the show as like teasers that I'd share with you some things that have happened to where it led up to me wanting to start this venture. And I have one of those things right here. And I'll share that with you after we listen to this one gentleman. This was signal to me, and I wanted to share it with you on this New Year's Eve. I wish I had a big like streamers and whatnot. We can still, do a... I actually hit the camera on that one. I like to have fun, but it's also, I like to have signal and not only listen signal, but provide signal. One of those gentlemen is by the name of Johann Pulitzer. And he's not the Pulitzer from Pulitzer Prize, but he likes to go by Jovan. And he's an inventor. He has over, I think He has over 100 patents. He's an entrepreneur. And I get some signal from him. I don't align on him on everything he says, but I do receive signal. And I recently watched one of his programs that kind of aligned a little bit with what I try to convey in this program. And we'll watch some from him, and then after that, we'll watch it together. And then after his program, if you hear anything that triggers you, it's not coming from me. There's some good nuggets in here that you can take away to try to see where I'm coming from. And he's a much better communicator than I am. So, but I'm getting there. He also, one of his inventions is a QR code, which can be seen as a double-edged sword. QR codes, Hobby Lobby is against barcodes because they think they symbolize the downfall of society. So I've heard. I do think barcodes are a double-edged sword, including the new electronic product codes and stuff like that. That they're putting on our products, but then also one of the reasons why I like his message and some of the things he touched on in this video is, and why I think I can relate with him a little bit, is that he invented the QR code, so he knows what he's invented. And most of the time that some of these folks that invent some of these things that have such an impact on society, they have both their feet on the ground. They have they realize what they've invented, and sometimes what the invention is used for is not what that person is. So he had some good some points in this video. And then also after that, I will share with you my attempt at a teaser. If you're watching this on on demand, you can fast forward ahead, but I encourage you to, listen to this gentleman and, see what you can take away from it. So let me pull it up here. And then afterwards I will, take a look at one of the many things that I, that influenced me to start this program.
Anyway, our system in the United States of America has gone overboard, right? Gone completely overboard. But one of the things I taught you about very long ago, if you've been with me for a while, and by the way, we're family and friends here. And if you want to hear the truth and you don't, you need to be placated or see who carried their, puppy in their purse and a starling and what's on them with the Kardashians and stuff, you're in the wrong freaking place. But our institutions moved kids away from great educations. And then what became a great education was them turning you into an activist, to a social warrior, to a, just total, absolute shit you can't apply. And most of them have been under the guise of a liberal arts degree, which basically means you could be a pastor, a poet, a writer. You follow what I'm saying? Not any specifics. So we got away from hardcore specifics in the country. Now, I've said for a very long time, this is part of the con. Because if we compared the two superpowers, the United States of America and China, and we look at what the countries focus on, you can tell a lot about a country, right? You can tell an incredible amount about the country. I want to look at this because one of the things I think is going on in our country is there is a very spiritual movement telling people, get back to the basics, get back to the basics, get back to the basics. It's almost like God's bending down, putting his hand up to his mouth, whispering to everybody, pay attention, pay attention. I'm showing you the way. But are we really listening? Right? Are we really listening? Are we working to make God great again, which I think we should do? But I do believe it's just like, and the signs are there, right? I can imagine God coming down from on high, looking across this land and a country which he loves, putting his hand up to the side of his nose and mouth and whispering, go, are you paying attention? Are you paying attention? Because, see, sometimes people think that God talking to them, the seas are going to part. And most of the time God talks to us is in a very light whisper. As faint as the wind sometimes. But we're not tuned into paying attention. And so I want to tackle this topic that was going on in chat, because it leads to exactly where I'm going to take you. Don't beg out early. Boy, are we going to do some sober soul searching. We're going to do some sober soul searching. Here is what is called STEM. Okay. Now, STEM is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Okay. Now, if you were to look at this on a global snapshot, China puts out, okay, and we're talking graduate degrees, okay? 4.7 million students trained in those each year. India is putting out 2.6 million. The United States, 568,000. Russia, 561,000. Iran, 335,000. Indonesia, 206,000. Japan, 195,000. So you can see where China's leading the world in STEM education. Our numbers are abysmal. Now, over time, okay, if you were to look at some of these countries, all of these countries are ramping up in STEM, because STEM is the future. STEM is the future. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Now, the United States of America, if you were to look at us on this scale of, sorry, shitification, you would find out that our net number, although it claims, and by the way, we used to be 500 some odd thousand in STEM. Ever since this administration, the current maladministration came in, that dropped from 580 some odd thousand to 437,302. We only put out 146,573 master degrees in STEM. That's it. And by the way, of those people, only 14% end up working in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It's abysmal. I'm telling you, it is abysmal. Okay? And that's how part of our country has been captured. If we're in the United States, and if we're the one country that everybody wants to break into to gain freedom and stuff, and this is why President Trump says get rid of the Department of Indoctrination. I always mispronounce that word. Department of Education. This is why. Because we're like number 37 or 8 out of 68 top countries. And we're going down, 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 and it's continuing. Okay? Now, if you wanted to look at why STEM, and yes, as these things go down, the cost of degrees go up. In the United States of America, you know, you're paying at these larger universities $40,000 a year for your child to get an advanced underwater basket weaving degree. The median hourly wage right now for a STEM job is about $38.85. Compared to all other jobs in the United States, which is about $19.30. Okay? So twice the value of the person who comes out of STEM, right? And remember, engineers, chemical engineers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, road engineers, on and on and on and on and on and on and on, right? To get a STEM degree, it's double the wage. We're 38th of 71 countries in math and 24th in science. But we lead the world in advanced social media viral postings and postings of absolute bullshit by college idiots. Anyway, 38 of 71 in math, 24th in science. And right now, our college students are not ready to take college level science courses. We're a little higher in math. Only 36% of students are ready for college science. Only 44% of college students are prepared for math at the college level. Unless you're from Illinois, and then when you graduate college, you are proficient in blunt rolling and blunt smoking. I'm sure they probably have a class on how to roll a tight blunt. Anyway, this is the part of how America is being destroyed. So you have to ask yourself, are we getting better or worse? Now, here's a very interesting thing. I am a creative. Yeah. However, I forced myself to train in the sciences. But I am a creative. And anybody who is a creative, I think, is the next generation of top STEMmers. Why? Because, see, science teaches you it's finite. Let's talk about code, right? If we were looking at code, which is just lines and lines and lines of bubbles and stuff going by and all these things, you can have a million line of code, but if you've got one little comma or hyphen or dot out of place, the whole thing breaks. So you also have to remember with science, technology, engineering, and math, there are finites. This way, where do you exceed? And what was the American exceptionalism that we had? We could be wildly creative, a la Stephen Jobs, etc., but we could also be technically advanced. And what has happened is there's been a great cleaving of that, because they push creative people to focus on just one, the creative part, when they are the people that will engineer our future because they can see it. And so that creative process and that science and technology and engineering and math is wildly important for the United States of America to survive, because in order to invent the future, you have to be able to see the future. And that's a creative process, not a finite process. And so this is what has led me to ask this question. Where are we in this process? Are we better off? Are our values better? Are our ethics better? Are our health better? Our health's not better. Kids can't even do a physical exam anymore. Is our education better? And then we've got this really interesting trend going. And you're right. Art is very technology oriented, right? But please understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying art isn't technical. I'm saying the true breakthrough that gets America back to greatness is creative art people who also understand and engage in science, technology, education, and math. And we bring these together. We've split them. We got to bring them back together. And by the way, just because they call it liberal arts doesn't mean there's any art in it, right? And you got to remember, you can be creative and love music, but remember, music is math. Math is music. Follow? All of this is interconnected. But if you understand how the system has cleaved us, then you understand why we're in the predicament we're in today. And so let's talk about a few trends. Did you know right now they're saying that 2 out of every 5 people, if they could, would prefer to live in a small town or rural areas? It's making an incredible resurgence. Would you agree? That you're probably now more in tune with, damn, that's the good life. Not the cars, not the jewelries, not the big ass house, not the massive social media followers. We've now made this about face, that more time than ever, people are valuing. Wow. I just want to get back to the basics, and I freaking hate the city. I want to get back to the land. I want to raise my children with simpler values, right? I want to raise my children with simpler values. Now, at the same time, and remember, we're living in one of the most interesting times in history ever, because at the same time, we have more knowledge than we've ever had at our fingertips. Collectively, we're dumber than ever. We have entire school districts in the United States of America where they have graduates that can't read and can't do math. But they must graduate them, because to not graduate them is racist and biased. You see what we've sold? We've sold kids, talented musical kids, especially those among Black Americans, you got to thug out, right? You got to thug out. And that's what's appropriate. Well, actually, what you're doing is you're teaching all these kids that want to be rappers to be thugs, and that's the way to get there. That's how they do this. That's how they do this. And so that's what we're going to take a look at, because things are changing. Right? I'll give you an example. If you wanted to take your family and get your ass outside and live on a homestead, now let's do a little bit of a dictionary check before we get into the next thing. You're saying, thanks to Bush, no child left behind bullshit. No, it was just a slight change. Bush had no child left behind, and then Obama and Biden came in and they said, spend a lot of time in the child's behind. It's a subtle change of words. Anyway, yeah. Let's talk about this. Okay, there's rural. And the complication is, oh, you got my joke. Thank you, I'll be here all week. The complication is that when you look at metropolitan areas, that's about 4% of our landmass in the United States of America. 4%. But 80% of our people live in that 4% landmass. Now, if you were to look at me, I've had credible, interesting wildlife. Have lived at the point at times where money's no object. If I wanted to go buy a new house, literally a new house, I could put it on my Black American Express and just no questions asked, no big deal, right? Jets, limos, famous people, just you name it, all bullshit. For a kid that was a, you know, welfare baby, it looked great. It sounded great, but none of it was real. So for me, I went back to my roots, which didn't devolve me down, brought me right back up. So there's rural, that means living outside of cities and suburbs, that's rural, okay? Then outside of that, when you really get out, then you're rural. The derivatives of rurals are family farms, and then the newest derivative are homesteaders. Now, a homesteader is a person that's getting away from any ties to the system they can, trying to get totally self-sufficient they can, food, water, energy, everything, right? That's a homesteader. Let me give you some numbers on that real quick, just so you know. In terms of the highest amount of people living in the lifestyle of homesteading, Montana, my state, has 151,600 homesteads, followed by North Dakota, 118,472 homesteads, and then Colorado with 107,618. Rounding out the top five is Nebraska with 104,000 and Oklahoma with 100,000. Okay? It is, now it's different than rural living or commune living in isolation. Unlike rural living, homesteading involves social or physical isolation of a homestead, looking for the mass amount of independence it can, self-reliance practices that you can get, right? But we've got this where people are trying to go back to their roots. People are trying to go back to the land and the roots because the cost of living's going through the roof. Everything's going through. Groceries are high, bills are high, living is high. It's all expensive to live. And they're saying, screw this. And when you figure in the time, the factor, water bills and all this other stuff, people are saying, I will grow my own food and I do not want to live where there are restrictions. I will grow my own food and I do not want to live where there are restrictions. Now, put in chat, I want to know, how many of you either are or have been thinking, damn it, I want to get away. I want to get away from the cities. I want to grow my own food. I want to control my own life. That's what I want for me. Okay? How many of you are thinking of that? I just want to be able to control my own destiny. I'm tired of this city crap. I'm tired of these regulations crap. Many of us say, I'm in. It would be pure heaven, right? It would be pure heaven, right? Etc. Now, some of you are saying, I want to because I want to grow my own weed. I knew I'd get that one. You know what's interesting? Some of the highest growth rates of gardening, one of the benefits we got out of the COVID pandemic was 18.3 million people started gardening. Most which were millennials. 42% of their people during the pandemic time spent at gardening. Online sales of gardening stuff and goods went through the roof. In fact, they doubled up 100%. We got to a level where 55% of Americans engaged in gardening activities. And we're talking that's massive, right? Now, 29% of the gardening demographics are millennials. One of their leading interests in millennials is they want a cannabis cultivation. So if you looked at gardening and lawn equipment each year, it's about a $48 billion business. They say a person who really gardens will generate about $600 a year in produce. And they're saying that 35% of U.S. households will grow fruits and vegetable for their own food. And if you get your children involved, they will gladly eat their vegetables because they grew them. Now get ready. We're seeing this move back to the basics, which I am all for, right? And it's exactly, look, I saw this coming. I told you it was coming, and that's why I did the Food Forest Bible, right? By the way, you guys made it a bestseller. Don't forget their soft copy, hard copy, and ebook. Just make sure it's got my name on the bottom, folks. So many people are copying off my work. It's ridiculous. Just make sure, because I'm telling you, this is not over. We are nowhere out of the weeds. In fact, the weeds have gotten weedier. Now we're going to get sober. We're going to get sober in a very serious way because I want to look at us. I know I want you to be honest now. Are we better off? Are our values better? Are our ethics better? Are our health better? Is our education better? For this little journey, we're going to go back 2.5, 2.75, hell, we'll call it 3 generations, okay? And we're going to take a look at what life was like. And we're going to take a look at what people were struggling with. And we're going to take a look at the government coming in and saying, well, we can fix this. Stay with me.
Little baby, now don't you cry. You know your heaven was meant to die. 17.5 million people. One-third of all rural families are left behind in an age of technology and industrial progress. Families, some of them large families, make less than $3,000 a year. Whites, Negroes, American Indians, Spanish Americans, farmers, ex-farmers, handymen, former coal miners, timber road builders, rural people struggling with poor housing.
Now, you're going to notice something very interesting as we go through this. This is a depression era look at poverty and not having. In a time, did you notice there? In a time where everybody's in it together. Yeah. Whites, blacks, browns. This is before the Great Cleave, where they started hyphenating all of us, right? And that's why I'm doing this little, this is called a social experiment. I want you to watch it. And the I that we're doing here is, are we better off? Are our values better? Are our ethics better? Is our health better? Our morals, our education? Because remember, it's white supremacy. Us against them. It's always been that way, not helping anybody out. Just take it, take it, take it, take it, take it.
Limited education, few employment opportunities, and little hope. Throughout America, regardless of race or heritage, they are trapped in a life they did not choose, a life they feel powerless to change.
Well, you can watch them walk along the street. They're bent over with their arms crossed frequently, looking down, walking usually slowly. You don't see any quickness or brightness in their step. They just have a defeated look. And a look of hopelessness.
I just do labor work and got no education. Just labor work's all I have to hunt for.
Well, there could be a whole lot done in the way of improvement. It could stand a whole lot more improving than furnishing. It's actually, it could stand some better than I used to get.
Now, just for a point of reference, this is exactly how my father, God rest his soul, and my aunts and uncles grew up. Literally, I have tons of pictures of all this stuff. But this particular video is dedicated to there's no education, they're not better off. Let's take a look at poor me. Now, you understand this is, well, kind of the opposite of the trend we just talked about, right? And some of you may truly have relatives still like that now. I hated when one of my buddy's brothers across the street would refer to us as hillbillies. I fucking hated it, right? Drove me nuts. But here I sit, I can can, I can hunt and fish and change a tire and all this other stuff that when we look at some of the millennials and Zers today, they cannot do. And that's why I'm going, are we better off? Did our values change? Are we better? Ethics, our health, our moral education. And that's why we're taking a look at this interesting program.
Which I don't know where the man will have to make out if he don't get no better. He'll have to make out some way. These six of us in family, and I only draw $96 a month. $96 a month for six. Told them, send them to school.
Yet we now know their lives can be changed. These people can join the rest of America in a life of fulfillment and plenty. But improvement can only come when all segments of the population join together in an effort dedicated to providing opportunities for these people.
these people. Listen to the words. Now, this is a time where instead of 80% of the people living and 4% of the land, right? People were spread out all across America, not dependent upon the system. And not being controlled. But remember, a lot of this is the tenor of these people. This is flyover land, isn't it?
Not more welfare checks, but opportunity, so they can use their own willingness and ability to become self-sufficient citizens. For example, it is difficult for a small farmer like this one to get along in the fast-moving world around him.
Okay. And I'm going to try not to interrupt this. I just want to do enough setup to understand. In the narrator's terms, these people aren't self-sufficient. And by the way, this footage is in Appalachia. I know exactly where these streams and hollers are, by the way. But the definition was these people can't be self-sufficient. Because the definition of self-sufficient meant in the city paying bills, having rent, etc. Now I promise. You're gonna see a few things. I want you to pay attention. I might as well tell you now. Look at people in this. Look at people of color. In this. In my family, aside from people of color and being around people of color, everybody was the same and everybody was together. So I want you to pay attention to look at these people and ask yourself, are we better off? Are our values better? Are our morals better? Our ethics, our health, our education? You might notice they're family units. You might have to run to an encyclopedia. Oh, shit, there's no more encyclopedias. You might have to Google what a family unit is if you're a Zer.
His gross income for the previous year was $3,500. Out of that, $3,000 had to be put back into farming, leaving $500 for his own use. He and his wife struggled with no running water, no plow of their own. Low-lying wet land and fields full of rocks. They have some cows, but no need for the right kind of feed. As a result, the cows cannot produce as well as they should. And the...
I'm sorry. Do you realize they have a home? You see how it's furnished? They have everything. Wow, if I just had a farm like that. And they're healthy. But they were sold it could be better with the system. And what it did is it repossessed their family farms.
Farmers' income dropped still lower. His chosen way of life becomes more and more difficult to maintain. He is ambitious, proud of the farm buildings that he built himself, sorry to have to owe money for necessities, and distressed at the prospect of losing his farm.
I know if I get the right amount of help, assistance on this farm, I know I could make a go of it.
Recognize the Pennsylvania Dutch.
Could make ends meet, and if I can't stay here, I would have to lose it. I surely wouldn't know what else to do, because I've done no other work in farming. I've been here all my life, and I sure would like to stay here.
When farmers leave, it affects the entire area.
At one time, there was large families living here. They made their living over the farm by farming the small fields. They raised their own vegetables and their own gardens. But it seems like that is all gone, that it slipped away from us. If we could help them just a little to live in these small communities and make a home here, we think it would be of great benefit to our cities and also our rural areas. The loss of this type of farm, the family farm, has been a great disaster to our particular part of the world here. It has taken the people away from us. Our little communities, our towns have lost the trade and the business. The people have lost and the soil has lost. It's a losing proposition, and our whole philosophy of life out here, the family farm, is being destroyed.
Some communities are seeking ways to help the farmers and keep them on the land.
We've had a demonstration farm program in connection with our work to help improve on livestock and on having better crops and in building up the soil and various forms of conservation. But we have moved more to the project method in order to suggest ways in which our people can at least supplement their income. One of the things that we are trying to do is to carry on work at our sorghum mill. Here, people raise cane and then bring it to the mill for processing. This is a project in which we have been able to get the people to take much of the initiative.
One of the things you're going to notice during this, you're going to notice all of the areas of the great consolidation. They took farms, factories, conglomerates, and business took all of this away from the people. They didn't buy, you know, then you bought local syrup. Now you don't. Kind of like the Black Rock fever. You understand how it works? You're looking at what we lost.
We have provided some leadership, however. We have a full-time director of economic development in our program.
The purpose of this project, this sorghum project, is to help the people of this area to help themselves. What we are really trying to do is to help really two classes of people, those farmers who would bring cane in to the mill, and also to help those who might be able to work here at the mill.
One of the firm convictions that we do have about our mountain people is that they do want to help themselves if given an opportunity. Doesn't necessarily have to be a sorghum project, but we feel one of the most important things is that local communities organize themselves and attempt to work at helping themselves together rather than depending on someone else to come in from the outside and furnish all the resources in terms of leadership and finances. It'll mean most when local communities can organize themselves and develop projects together.
But industry is only part of the answer. Sometimes a relatively small improvement can mean the difference between success and failure.
The most important thing is, in this valley of ours here, is the water. Without water, we cannot do anything.
Every year, the people of this farming community put up a brush dam in an effort to get water for their crops.
Okay, this is a great teaching moment. Farmers in a valley, water's the most important thing. They build a brush dam, like a beaver, to hold back the water so they have enough water for the crops, but every 2 years they have to replace it. Now they're about to get government assistance. I want you to pay attention to how the government assistance came to them.
But every year, the dam washed away in the floods. Many people got discouraged, left their farms, and moved away. Those who remained refused to be defeated. This time they worked with the state and federal governments and received technical help and some equipment. The people worked without any pay to build the new dam, and it has outlasted the floods.
What did the government provide to the people? The government gave them equipment. Technical expertise and materials, and said, we'll assist you. Here it is. You go build it. And the people did. That was government efficiency. The people needed something. The government said, okay, we know you need this. You're doing this little dam anyway. We will provide you equipment. We'll tell you how to do it, right? And we'll give you materials, but you're going to do it. Now, that is a partnership between what the people actually want, that they're going to put their work into, and how the government can help. Now, it changed. The government has to do everything. Let's say you're a bunch of farmers right now somewhere and you need to dam the creek up to get more water on your land. Can you do it? It's a state and federal offense. If you put up a barrier to try to raise the level of the water flow, well, unless you have the one-eyed lesbian pink speckled trout, well, then you can raise the water a little bit, but that's environmental. Do you understand how all this works? At one time, we had a system that was fairly efficient, but the government never stopped. They never stopped demanding more and taking more. Just like, I think I saw it in Boston. Boston has now literally... My phone has to be on. I'm waiting for a call. Boston, they've decided to go ahead and tax all of the citizens for contributing to pollution so they could help bear the cost. And I think New York City just passed it, too. They call it you've got to pay an environmental fee because you're polluting. It's just another tax. But at one time... And you see, and I'm showing you this because you see, the more we get away from things, the government says, well, we got to do it for you, whatever. Does it always work out for the best?
You see behind us now is the most important thing for the people in this community, and mostly because we made it with our own hands, and the people are very proud because they've done the work themselves.
But see, the government doesn't want people proud. The government doesn't want to go, holy smokes, look what we did. We can do stuff like, The government wants to like, oh, please help me. We can't do it. Look at this schoolyard. Boy, if we just had schools like this again.
Rural poverty involves more than the specific problems of farmers. Its effects are widespread. Children are especially hard hit. By nature, full of life, exuberant, eager to learn, children are crushed by poverty. Hunger,
I got a question for you. Are we looking at crushed children? Just a question. Are we looking at crushed children and defeated people? We were looking at kids that were miserable because they don't get a meal. I think it's quite the opposite.
...to the floods.
The dam you see behind us now is the most important thing for the people in this community, and mostly because we made it with our own hands, and the people are very proud because they've done the work themselves.
Rural poverty involves more than the specific problems of farmers. Its effects are widespread. Children are especially hard hit. By nature, full of life, exuberant, eager to learn, children are crushed by poverty. Hunger, malnutrition, and disease often stifle these young lives before they have a chance to develop.
They're undernourished, malnourished, rather. They get worms. Now, it's a pitiful thing to see, but 80 out of 100 children in some of these schools have parasitosis, which means worms.
It's common knowledge that literally thousands of children go to school each day and go throughout the day with anything to eat because they do not have lunchroom money.
Well, I would love to see them have a hot lunch, for one thing. Now, under stuff, have a can, you know, and pour it out. And...
The children entering many others. They had no breakfast before leaving home. But this school found a way to give them a hot meal early in the morning. The cafeteria staff is paid by the regular school lunch program, and the extra food is provided by the federal government. As a result, the children no longer have fainting spells, nor do they sit through a long day of classes on an empty stomach.
Now, this is really interesting. We previously saw a bunch of happy kids in a one-room schoolhouse having fun. And yes, you can have worms if you're around animal, but you just kind of give them something cheap like ivermectin and they're gone. But then, on the other side, well, instant, look at what we're doing in the city. We instituted a school program. The government provides the food, and we're giving them a hot breakfast in the morning. And it's great, and it's changing their lives. So we're given the juxtaposition here of rural life and city life. Notice the nice little shiny cafeteria. I'm going to go a little bit backwards. We're going to look at the poor kids. Look at faces. Do they look healthy? Have their teeth or anything like that? And then we're going to look at the kids in the great, wonderful, well, the government's going to take care of your program. Let's see if we notice any differences in their faces or their eyes, their energy. When the government said, I can help you here, we've got the program for you.
Rural poverty involves more than the specific problems of farmers. Its effects are widespread. Children are especially hard hit. By nature, full of life, exuberant, eager to learn, children are crushed by poverty. Hunger, malnutrition, and disease often stifle these young lives before they have a chance to develop.
They're undernourished, malnourished, rather. They get worms. Now, it's a pitiful thing to see, but 80 out of 100 children in some of these schools have parasitosis, which means worms.
It's common knowledge that literally thousands of children go to school each day and go throughout the day with anything to eat because they do not have lunchroom money.
Well, I would love to see them have a hot lunch, for one thing. Now, under stuff, have a can, you know, and pour it out. And...
The children entering many others. They had no breakfast before leaving home. But this school found a way to give them a hot meal early in the morning. The cafeteria staff is paid by the regular school lunch program, and the extra food is provided by the federal government. As a result, the children no longer have fainting spells, nor do they sit through a long day of classes on an empty stomach.
What about the child who comes from an inadequate home where he gets no encouragement from his parents, where he doesn't have enough to wear, he doesn't have enough to eat, he comes to school hungry, he comes to school without having it.
And those kids have parents that say, hey, you see that little dongle dilly there, that little stick and those little pea berries? That means you're a boy. Hey, you see that? That means you're a girl. And these parents decide the gender for their kids, and they're oppressed. They force them to eat home-cooked meals grown on the very land they live on. They abuse these kids by not letting them eat processed foods. And we know that's the future. We can make this happen if we put all the food in a can and can control it. These kids are forced to eat butter that's churned there on the family farm. Can you imagine that? They have to do chores and sometimes sew their own clothes to fix that jeans, and they don't get a new pair because they can't go down to the store and buy a pair immediately when they see another kid wearing it. To see these kids, they all wear the same shoes. That is suppression. Listen to the words. It's always freaking fear porn.
Knowledge that literally thousands of children go to school.
I went to a school and I saw a little boy. They were violent. They were swinging big sticks at each other. I'm serious. I saw it with my own two eyes.
Are crushed by poverty. Hunger, malnutrition, and disease often stifle these young lives before they have a chance to develop.
They're undernourished. Malnourished, rather. They get worms. Now, it's a pitiful thing to see, but 80 out of 100 children in some of these schools have parasitosis, which means worms.
It's common knowledge that literally thousands of children go to school each day and go throughout the day with anything to eat because they do not have lunchroom money.
Well, I would love to see.
Yes, we live in a country with 120 million people, and we just found out that thousands of kids don't actually have a hot lunch. Yes, I know, but who wants to eat cold grits and possum guts every day? We want them to have a hot lunch because 1,000 kids can't do that. It's always about the savior complex. We can do it better. And if you saw those kids eating oatmeal and stuff, they were not happy. There was not a smile in the room.
You don't have a hot lunch, for one thing. Now, under stir up, have a can, you know, and pour it out. And
the children entering many others. They had no breakfast before leaving home. But this school found a way to give them a hot meal early in the morning. The cafeteria staff is paid by the regular school lunch program, and the extra food is provided by the federal government. As a result, the children no longer have fainting spells, nor do they sit through a long day of classes on an empty stomach.
What about?
Yes, those damn country kids had to drink whole milk directly from the cow. But we found, as the government, if we put the milk in a carton, pasteurize it, and have you drink that, well, you'll drink our milk instead of doing your own milk. Yes, I know the taxpayer pay it, but we're going to say it's from the government.
Do you remember how many times as a kid, you got your milk money? You got your milk money? That was a corporate education crap partnership. You got your milk money? I don't know about you, but I'd rather have the fucking biscuits and gravy than that crap.
The child who comes from an inadequate home where he gets no encouragement from his parents, where he has doesn't have enough to wear, he doesn't have enough to eat, he comes to school hungry, he comes to school without having any experience in the past with books, anyone at home to help him, the attitude of the family is that of frustration and despair.
We're hoping that in the daycare center, a demonstration research project, to give these children an opportunity to have the experiences.
Okay. Did you catch this one? And this is part of why I wanted to show it, because gotta save the children. Their parents don't know what they're doing. We gotta save the poor children. This is the pilot program for daycare. Government school funded daycare. Cleaving kids from their parents and their parents' direct tutelage. And you caught the word, it's an experiment. Imagine that.
School hungry, he comes to school without having any experience in the past with books, anyone at home to help him. The attitude of the family is that of frustration and despair.
We're hoping that in the daycare center, a demonstration research project, to give these children an opportunity to have the experiences, social and educational, to better prepare them for the first grade and later education. These children of this particular area, without this experience, would be spending most of their time in the homes which are not equipped to give them the type of advantages which we are at the daycare center.
You can't do this at home because you don't have any crayons, and we don't want you to have to riot in mud and chicken poo. We got to give you that experience because you're not getting it at home. And you heard we need to socialize you. We must socialize you.
To better prepare them for the first grade and later education.
The regular school lunch program. And the extra food is provided by the federal government. As a result, the children no longer have fainting spells, nor do they sit through a long day of classes on an empty stomach.
What about the child who comes from an inadequate home where he gets no encouragement from his parents, where doesn't have enough to wear, he doesn't have enough to eat, he comes to school hungry, he comes to school without having any experience in the past with books, anyone at home to help him. The attitude of the family is that of frustration and despair.
We're hoping that in the daycare center, a demonstration research project, to give these children an opportunity to have the experiences, social and educational, to better prepare them for the first grade and later education. These children of this particular area, without this experience, would be spending most of their time in the homes which are not equipped to give them the type of advantages which we are at the daycare center. It is our hope that by giving these children preschool experience, they will be ready for learning when they do enter their first grade.
The Meadowbrook Daycare Center has been in operation now a little over a year. We recognize the fact that a lot of our young boys and girls in the grammar grades were staying home to take care of children. So therefore, we were interested in providing some type of supervised care for these children. Then another thing that we thought in terms of, if we could get the daycare center started, it would mean for some people a gainful employment. Another thing that we were very concerned with was the fact that these children's parents would be able to work and they wouldn't have to worry about what are their children doing at home. Another thing is the fact that other communities in their county are interested in trying to provide some type of supervised care for the children.
I think the problem of basic education for our children is a critical one, and one that we don't really see the total picture on. The schools can't do the whole job.
With the kids in school, it gets pretty hard. When they run out of clothes, we have nine. One is my oldest boy. Quit school last year. He didn't go to school. We did all we could. We talked to him, and my brother used to write to him and talk to him, tell him. But I guess he just didn't want to go to school anymore. He said that he never did have what he needed most of the time, and that when it got to where he had to pay for those current events and things like that, that all the other kids would pay for him, and he was the only one that...
Okay. So the kid quit school. Means nothing. But did you catch why he quit school? Because the kid had all these events and stuff and taking him places to entertain the kids, and he couldn't pay the fee, which was required. And this is exactly the time they started pushing moms to work out of the home, and it all began. A lot to unpack here.
Are interested in trying to provide some type of supervised care for the children.
I think the problem of basic education for our children is a critical one, and one that we don't really see the total picture on. The schools can't do the whole job.
With the kids in school, it gets pretty hard. When they run out of clothes, we have nine. One is my oldest boy. Quit school last year. He didn't go to school. We did all we could. We talked to him, and my brother used to write to him and talk to him, tell him. But I guess he just didn't want to go to school anymore. He said that he never did have what he needed most of the time, and that when it got to where he had to pay for those current events and things like that, that. All the other kids would pay for him. He was the only one that would be without paying, and it used to embarrass him and things like that. Well, maybe that's what actually got him to where he didn't even want to study anymore. I really don't know.
We do occasionally have a few who cannot make out in the public school. They are so far behind from not having attended school regularly in their own homes that they are too frustrated to learn in the public school. They feel they can't do it, and they, as a result, their behavior is difficult, and the teachers find it very difficult to teach them.
Operative word, public schools. Operative word, follow our rules. Operative word, you're not learning, you're bad. You feel bad, you act up, therefore you're a disruption. How far have we come on this one? Now teachers make sure kids are medicated and have a say. I know if teacher says, you know, to parents, you don't get that boy on Ritalin, I'm not going to let him in my class. Yeah, teachers.
These children, we have a special class here on our campus where they can...
I just have to say, isn't it refreshing?
That was Jovan Pulitzer. He goes by Jovan Pulitzer. He's an American inventor. He does I'll go to this one. He's an American inventor and entrepreneur. Obviously, I don't endorse everything you saw there. Some of the not responsible for the chats or some of his humor, but I thought you could see some signal from that. And for those of you that are quietly wanting more and wanting a better future for your children and for your family, it's my intention to have this program for you and to where you can have a voice. And this is your megaphone. It's Carrie's megaphone. It's New Year's. We're coming up on 10 o'clock, so I know you guys have other programming that you probably want to watch. So I'll cut this down, and I still have this one artifact that I purchased in Cary. I won't share with you the store that I bought it from, but it's this something that threw one of the red flags up in my face to where I was like, I don't want my kids being subject to this. I don't want my kids being able to be have the opportunity to purchase this or get into this world. And it used to be to where you saw in the video, we used to be a village. It used to be a community, whether it be in the farming communities that you saw or what it meant to be a village was. What it means to be a village is watching after not only our children, but everybody's children, watching after everybody's family. I'll share with you this quick story. My wife and I used to travel before we started our business. When I worked for the fire department, I would take time off and we would travel the interstates and travel all around the country. And we were traveling the interstate, and we had this program where it was a podcast, and we would videotape exits along the interstate, and we actually videotaped every exit along I-80 from California to where it terminates out east. And I remember this one exit I got off at. It was in Pennsylvania. And it was after dark. It was probably like 10, 11 o'clock. And it was probably like, I saw on the GPS, it was probably like 3 or 4 miles to town off the interstate, off this exit. And there was a farm right on the interstate, and this farm probably went for like 4 or 5 acres along this road heading towards town. And there was a gentleman that was way out in the distance that was like a farmhand or the owner of the farm and working. It looked like he was working on the fence. And when we got off the interstate and we're driving towards town, he shines a light at us. How I took that was he wants us to know that he's there. He wants us to know that he sees us. He wants to find out who that is coming into town. And that's what a village is watching what we bring in, what we subject our kids to, what we subject our families to. And a lot of the stuff, I think there's a quiet majority that wants to do something about it. One thing I bought, it's 9:55 on New Year's Eve. This is one of the things I purchased in the Village of Cary that started, that was kindling to the fire in my belly to want to start this program. And we'll take a look at it right now. It's this. I bought it with cash. And this is the change that I keep that was left over from the purchase to remind me that this needs a change and that we can change what we subject our kids to and what we can do in our communities and how when we get together we can do amazing things. What this is, if you have kids watching, please, and it's a shame I have to say that for something I purchase and carry, but if you have kids watching, they should be in bed. Well, that's New Year's. This is something called a cracker. There's two pieces. One side's an empty canister, and then one side has a empty part of it, but it also has a little piercing thing on the very top. And what it's used with, that the store also sold, that was at child height, mind you, in the store, is these nitrous oxide canisters that you use to make whipped cream. But other folks use it for other reasons. And that's what this product is made for that I bought here in Cary. And you put the canister in here. I've never done this. I'm not probably. And then you screw it down and it pierces the top of the nitrous oxide canister. Probably getting very cold at the top. But then what you do is you put it in your mouth and it's essentially laughing gas and you get a high off of it. That was one of the red flags and part of the reason why I wanted to start this program, because I think that there's other folks out there that see this. There's other folks that want to get focal. This is one example of a lot of things that, and Cary's, it's not unique to Cary that these challenges are all over the place, but it starts with community and it starts with you. I think that gentleman that shined the light at me coming in, if he knew I was coming to sell a case of these to a store in town, he would tell me where I could put them. So it's kind of heavy on New Year's, but I if this is part of your New Year's resolution, is to get more involved in the community and make this place a strong place for our children and for our families and for our community, and we shine that light on stuff that needs to get shined light on. This is your megaphone, and it's always here for you to use it. It's 9:59. When it comes to midnight, Happy New Year, and I hope all of your resolutions are good ones, and you fight for them and you keep after it. I look forward to what the new year brings, and we broadcast live here on that color is amazing. We broadcast live every weekday on Rumble X and YouTube. This show is for you, and Happy New Year. We will see you tomorrow in 2025. Have a wonderful evening. Take care.
You're confirmed at T-minus 10 seconds.
In counting, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Reach for the sky.
Huh?
This town ain't big enough for the two of us.
What?
Somebody's poisoned the water hole.
It's busted.
Who are you calling busted, Buster? That's right. I'm talking to you, Sid Phillips. We don't like being blown up, Sid. Or smashed, or ripped apart.
We?
That's That's right. Your toys.
So, faithful followers, the end is nigh. We bid you farewell
with dignity and pride.
We thought we'd never die,
but, well,
you can't fight City Hall. And so,
take care. Be good.
Listen to the music. It's a good thing to do. It's the count. Count down and out for the count at last. 3, 2, 1, and the rest is silence.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Tony. Well done, Tony.
Thank you, sir.
The Queen.
Her Majesty's Government.
Only kidding, dude!
Let's rock!
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
My generation. My generation, baby. Why don't you all fade
away?
Don't try and dig what we all say. Talking about my generation. We all talking about my generation. Cause we could get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things ain't doing awful cold.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Yeah.
not stop.